If I could summarize it in four words, it would be the immigrant edge and the American dream. Fear of ever being broke again or living in a oppressive government. I've seen that. I have a fear of that. And I will always work my butt off to be successful. I wanted a champagne life, but I was getting a beer paycheck.
And if you can't sell, you're gonna lose in this economy, right?
Yeah. How you do anything is how you do everything, right?
And is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one thing you can do immediately to create a positive change in your life tomorrow is to not hit the snooze button when your alarm goes off. But I kept telling myself, Bedros, it's time to man up. It's time to man up.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the I Love Success podcast. My mission is to help 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. And I can't do it myself. That's why I'm here today in Chino Hills. I'm gonna meet with an amazing person called Bedros Koulian. He's the founder of Fit Body Bootcamp, one of the fastest growing franchises in the world for fitness. He's just an incredible human being. But it's not always been like this. He's an immigrant kid, a former chubby kid. Now he's a little bit more buff. And he was a guy who used to do a lot of wrongs, but now he started to man up and change his life. And when he changed himself, everything else around him started to change. So I'm so grateful to be in his own studio today and record the I Love Success podcast. Welcome, Bedros.
Thank you for having me and welcome to our headquarters,
yeah,
Peter.
Yeah, I was just saying, can I say welcome you? Can I take ownership of that?
Absolutely, man. This is your show and I'm just grateful to be on it. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm grateful too. And I'm going to jump right into it, Bedros.
Sure.
Who are you really as a person?
If I could summarize it in four words, it would be the immigrant edge and the American dream. And by that, I mean I'm a immigrant that came to this country from a communist country, Soviet Union, Armenia specifically. And, I was 6 years old in 1980 when we came here. And there was no internet, there was no technology. The government didn't offer as many support systems for immigrants as it does today. And so, you know, being foreigners, not speaking English, not knowing the culture, not having money, it was a tough upbringing for us. But my dad had a vision for bringing us to the United States and letting us grow as entrepreneurs, having us experience freedom, seeing opportunity. And those are all the things you couldn't do in a communist country. You can't be an entrepreneur. Freedom doesn't exist. And you can't voice your opinion when you're in a communist country. And so my dad, we escaped communist Russia, Soviet Union, and he risked his life to get us here. And so when he told us that we have freedom and opportunity and we can become entrepreneurs or anything we wanted, I took advantage of that. And I figured the best way to honor my mom and dad who took that risk was to become successful. But in the process of becoming successful, I did, as you alluded to your intro, I did hit a lot of road bumps. You know, when you are yelled at and cussed at and told to go back to your own fucking country, it leaves a lot of scars on you as a young man. And I grew up with a lot of rage, a lot of anger, a lot of hatred towards the people who didn't want us here in this country. And so I got into a lot of trouble. And when I mean trouble, I mean like police helicopter chases, carjackings. And it's not something I'm proud of, but I share this in full transparency because if I didn't have mentors in my life who taught me the idea of karma, like I would do a carjacking, then later one night after a carjacking in the afternoon, that night I took a girl out to a date, to a miniature golfing. And little did I know that the guy that we carjacked was in an Asian gang and he had followed me afterwards and knew where I was that night, and 13 of them came in to the golf course and beat me with golf clubs and put me in the hospital that night. And so I learned about karma very quickly. Growing up, I was a fat kid, so that gives you a lot of kind of insight into...
Me too.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you could imagine, now you're a foreigner, you're a fat kid, you're told to go back to your own country, your parents are you know, yelled at, hey, you're taking all of our American jobs. Like, it was a different America in the 80s. It was a different America. I have to explain that. And so, and then of course, you know, in high school, elementary school, no one wants to talk to you if you're the fat kid. It's not like today where everybody's accepted. You're the fat kid, they're making fun of you, man. Bullying was real. It's not just cyberbullying, it was real. And so there was a lot of anger and rage, and I had no direction for an outlet. And so I got into a lot of trouble. Thankfully, my senior year of high school, I decided that I'm going to lose weight so I can ask a girl out to the prom. And when I lost the weight the summer of senior year, I lost like 35 pounds of fat and started to work out and put on some muscle. Peter, I completely changed as a human. More confident, self-esteem. I would look people in the eyes and I would talk to them, shake their hands. And so I wanted to then, after high school, become a personal trainer. And that's when I started realizing that I have mentors around me, because anyone who could afford a personal trainer usually has a good amount of money. Yeah. That means they're probably an entrepreneur. They've done something in life to climb that high in success. And thankfully, my clients were my best mentors and guided me out of the self-destruction that I was in and into becoming an entrepreneur.
That's amazing, and we're going to talk much more about that. Yeah. Okay, so let's move on and talk about you deciding to becoming an entrepreneur. When did you decide to do that?
You know, I was working at a big box gym in LA Fitness, La Habra, actually Fountain Valley, and then I went to La Habra. Yeah. It's like a big chain of gyms. And for all personal trainers in the fitness industry, the big box gym is a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because they have gym members and your job is to approach them and, hey, do you want to be a client? Can I help you get faster results? I'm a personal trainer. Do you want to hire me? Well, that's great, but the gym pays you at the time I was getting paid $11 an hour. Today it's probably $20, $25 an hour. It's still nothing amazing. Like, you're not going to live a impactful life. You're not going to experience many of this planet's amazing places, destinations at $25 an hour. And so I would always complain to my clients, like, oh man, you know, you're paying $800 a month. The gym is getting that. I'm getting $11.50 an hour, you know, and it's probably bad form to complain to them, right?
I love it.
Yeah, but you know, I was a young man. Yeah. And so because of that, you know, Peter, I had two side jobs. I was a fry cook at Disneyland while I was a personal trainer. And I was a bouncer at a gay bar because the gay bar paid more than the straight bar. And when you work at Disneyland, you get to know a lot of gay people because a lot of gay people work at Disneyland for some reason. And so I made great friends with the gay community. And they said, one day I was complaining to them, like, man, as a personal trainer, I don't make enough money and I have to have the side job and I still need more money because Christmas is coming and I've got nieces and nephews. And this guy, Randy, he goes, well, if you don't mind working at a gay club, gay nightclub, I can get you a job as a bouncer. He goes, and they pay more than the straight bar. I'm like, well, dude, I work with you here. I don't mind going there, you know? So anyway, long story short, I remember thinking to myself, there is no nurse who's also a fry cook and a bouncer. There is no architect who's a fry cook and a bouncer. But in the personal training fitness industry, it's notorious that we have side jobs to make ends meet. And so I'm complaining to one of my clients, his name is Jim Franco, and he goes, why don't you do something about it? He goes, you're a horrible salesman. I go, no, I sold you on a $600 a month program. He goes, no, you didn't. You're an order taker. You just took my order. Like, you're not a salesman. You don't understand sales. He goes, I came in here looking for 3 days a week for a personal trainer, and you just took my order. Oh, dang, okay. So the next day, he shows up with a cassette tape, which is a sales tape, and it teaches real estate agents how to sell homes. And so he goes, here, I want you to listen to this. And I look at the cover. I go, this says real estate sales. I'm a personal trainer. This can't help me. He goes, listen, every time you hear real estate, just change it to personal trainer. You're going to do fine. Man, that tape from Tom Hopkins led me to Brian Tracy, then Zig Ziglar, then Dan Kennedy, then Tony Robbins, then Jay Abraham, Gary Albert. And before you know it, I've just become this master at marketing, sales, influence, persuasion. And I'm closing deals left and right. I'm still making $11, $12 an hour. And I go, hey, Jim, I'm closing all these deals for the health club. He goes, well, why don't you open up your own place? I don't have any money. He goes, I'll loan you the money. You pay me back 8%, but I still be your 50% business partner even after you pay me back. It was a horrible deal, but I took it because yeah. I didn't know it was a horrible deal. So I paid him back 8% interest, and he was my business partner in my first gym. After that, I opened up four more. But it was the pain of being an employee. The pain of being an employee was so bad for me. The pain of having multiple jobs was so bad, Peter, that I had to become an entrepreneur because I wanted a champagne life, but I was getting a beer paycheck.
And what's the art of selling? If you would, it's hard to summarize, but what's the most important things to think about when you are selling something?
Good question. It's two things. And most people go, oh, selling, man. I didn't become a doctor to sell. I didn't become a personal trainer to sell. Look, I'm in great shape. She's 200 pounds overweight. Her doctor says she needs to lose weight. Her husband says she needs to lose weight. Her neighbor says she needs... I shouldn't have to sell you. No, you do. Because odds are the person who's 200 pounds overweight, 100 pounds, 50 pounds overweight, they don't have a diet problem. They have an emotional problem that they're using food as the treatment. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so if you understand marketing, then you can explain to them, like I was able to explain to them, it's called transference of feelings. I don't have to sell you. I would just go, hey, Mrs. Jones, can I be honest with you? I used to be 35 pounds overweight. And in high school, I wasn't friends with the jocks. I wasn't friends with the smart kids, with the gothic kids, with the musician kids. In fact, I hated lunch in high school because every group was sitting around having fun and eating. And because I felt like a pariah, I felt like an outcast. Peter, I would just walk around the quad because I didn't even have a place that I belonged in. And so I just was like, I hope no one sees me. I hope I'm invisible. I hope lunch is over soon. I would just walk around waiting for that 45-minute lunch period to end. Well, that happens with grown adults today. We eat ourselves because of trauma, of something in our relationship, financial stress, you name it. Something's going on and we're using food as the medication. I was using food as the medication because I was a kid who had been bullied. I was a kid who had been told, go back to your own fucking country. And so to me, I had low self-esteem, low self-image, and food gave me that dopamine hit that I needed to get me through the day, right? And it was a source of comfort. Well, as it turns out, thankfully, because I wanted to ask a girl out, I decided that I better make an effort and lose weight. Turns out I got more self-esteem and comfort by being fit and athletic than ever with food. So if you understand marketing and selling, you can transfer those feelings. Now I can talk to Mrs. Jones, who's 50 to 250 pounds overweight, and say, can I tell you my story? Can I tell you how I was hiding? Can I tell you how I was suffering? Can I tell you how I used food as medication? And when I transfer my feelings over to her, she goes, I want to do business with you. Here's my money. Help me get there. Because she doesn't have a diet problem. You can go to YouTube and figure out what diet to eat for free. You can go to YouTube and figure out what exercises to do. If you want motivation, go to YouTube and Google Tony Robbins and you got motivation. You want accountability? Go download whatever it's called, whatever app you need to for accountability. Everything's there, it's free. You need a person to tell you and guide you and say, I was once where you are. I know your pain, I know your suffering, I know you're suffering in silence. And it doesn't matter if you're a dentist, by the way, if you're a chiropractor, you're a personal trainer, it's the same thing. So selling is transference of feelings. People go, well, I don't want to force someone to give me their money in exchange for my service. Just transfer your feelings. Yeah. But if we don't know how to do that, we think selling is bad. It's not bad.
Yeah, I think like selling is everything.
Everything.
You sell every. I met with Ryan Serrant, which is one of the best real estate agents in the world, and he's like, we're constantly selling something. Even you sell to your kids, or if you're a mom, or like you always sell something. And if you can't sell, you're gonna lose in this economy, right?
Yeah.
And you don't want to be that person,
no.
Especially when you're good at something. We talk about doctors and all these things. And I listened to the impact theory with you yesterday.
Yeah.
It was interesting. You said you're not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
I'm not.
But you seem very intelligent. And look, we're sitting in your offices here. Why do you think you made this happen, you know? Because it must be something with you that made this happen, you know?
Two things. Consistence and persistence. I am obsessed. For some reason, I lock onto things, which means I am persistent. Like I will do something over and over again until I figure it out. For example, you said you weren't naturally gifted at karate, right? At martial arts. But let's say you were. Yeah. If you were, and we both learn a new, I don't know, kick, block, whatever, and you pick it up right away, good for you. I'll keep doing it until 2 years from now, I can do it as good as you. So that's the persistence. And the consistency is that I lock onto something and I just keep doing it. You could set your clock to me. So you don't have, and I'm proof, you don't have to be the most, I've taken an intelligence test. I am average intelligence. Like, I am the average human being. In fact, I've got ADD, OCD, and the ADD is damaging to me, but the OCD is the persistence. And the consistence part is, my dad always said, like, finish what you start. Well, if I'm going to try and become an entrepreneur and I want 2,500 locations worldwide so we can impact 5 million people every year or every morning through fitness, I better be consistent. Those are the only two reasons why I've made it.
Yeah. And how, let's talk about healing. How is your healing? You started with this when you were 38. How is it going, the healing?
Good, man. And here's how it started too. It was accidental. Right around 38, at the age of 38, I had my first anxiety attack, which I talk about in the book, and I called it, you know, in the book, I call it the morning of my heart attack, because I thought I was having a heart attack, man. Like, my throat was closing up, my arms were tingling, my tunnel vision, I couldn't breathe right. And Peter, I was thinking, like, who's gonna raise my daughter? Who's gonna give my son, you know, fatherly lessons? And somehow I survived that heart attack. Well, as it turns out, it was an anxiety attack, my first of many. And so the doctor put me on Xanax, and I didn't like using Xanax because I was foggy-headed and, you know, I couldn't perform at work. So I did a Google search, and Google helped me find this guy named Kevin Downing. He's in Brea, he's a psychologist, and he's a performance psychologist. So he'll help you perform better at life or sports or whatever your thing is. And so I went to him, I said, hey, look, I'm getting anxiety. I need to not have anxiety so I can work. Because when I have anxiety, I end up taking NyQuil and Vicodin at night so I can sleep. And I don't want to do that. So he goes, all right, well, in 4 weeks, he helped me. He helped me get over anxiety. And he taught me two things. One is halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. When you're hungry, angry, lonely, tired, you're going to have an anxiety if you're me. If you're an alcoholic, you're likely going to hit the bottle. If you're a drug addict, if you're hungry, lonely, angry, tired, you're going to go back to drugs. Whatever your vice is, if you're hungry, lonely, angry, tired, halting, you're gonna go back to that. So he says, hey, make sure if you're hungry, stop what you're doing, go take a bite, go get some food, nourish your body, get some water. Lonely, stop being lonely. A lot of people suffer when they're lonely, right? Stop being lonely, go take a walk with your wife, hang out with your kids, connect with a friend, go surfing. So I started to do those things. And then the other thing he taught me was anxiety is anticipation of future pain. So when you're having an anxiety moment, it's because you're anticipating a future problem, a future pain that you're not addressing. So in 4 weeks, I shook his hand. Kevin, thank you so much. I haven't had anxiety for 4 weeks now. You've cured me. I understand halt. I understand anxiety is future anticipation of future pain. Peace out. And he goes, hey, before you leave, how's your life? How's the rest of your life? Great, everything's fine. How was your childhood? Great. Did your parents ever beat you? I'm like, you know, my dad slapped me around here and there, but that's just a communist way. But compared to what happened to me when I was a kid, even in Armenia, my dad slapping me around is nothing. He goes, wait a minute, there's something worse that happened to you than being slapped around by your dad? I go, yeah. And that's pretty much led to the next 16 months. Every Monday for 16 fucking months, I went to Kevin and we just went through what happened to me as a kid. And the three things it had done to me is I was shame, rage, and confusion. I was in this constant cycle of shame. Like, I'm embarrassed. I can't believe I got molested. What did I do to deserve, right? I'm embarrassed by this. Confusion, like, did I encourage that? Did I do something to get molested? Like, did I encourage these guys to do this to me over and over again? And then the rage. How the fuck could this happen to me? Like, this will never happen to me again. And I'm gonna be big and strong and powerful so this never happens to me again. And so when you're stuck in this cycle of shame, rage, confusion, you're doing a lot of carjackings. You're doing a lot of bad things to people because you are just acting out. That's all it is. It was a young boy acting out as a man, right? And so as Kevin helped me, I call it, I had three mountains that I always had to battle in my whole life. And as he just straightened those mountains out, now my path was even. I wasn't flying off the handle. I'm not ashamed of what happened. I didn't do anything to attract that. It happened to me. It doesn't define me. And anybody watching or listening to this, like, no one gets out of this life unscathed. The statistics are this. One out of every three people will have physical, mental, emotional trauma. One out of every four people will have sexual trauma, sexual abuse. It doesn't matter if it's physical, sexual, emotional, mental. The part of your brain that lights up when there's trauma is the same. And so you start seeing life through different filters. No trust, anger, rage, pessimism, right? And when you're looking at life and hearing life through those twisted filters, things aren't gonna work out for you. And they weren't working out for me. And that was the source of my anxieties. And so thankfully, everything's great. I can openly talk about it now. I had never talked about it. My wife didn't know. No one knew for 38 years. And now when it's the timing's right, I do talk about it. And it's just a blip on my radar. That's it.
Yeah, thank you for sharing this. So man up, what does that mean, you know?
Yeah. It certainly is. It's not just gender specific to men. It's man up is this to me. When I had a business partner in Fit Body Bootcamp, and he was a good human, but we had two different visions for Fit Body Bootcamp, how Fit Body Bootcamp was gonna be. And I would hear his Corvette driving up to our old office down the street, 2 miles away from here, and I would start feeling anxiety because there was conversations that he and I needed to have, but I wasn't willing to have those conversations because I was too people-pleasing. I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I didn't want to seem like a bad guy. And so instead, I would carry that and led to anxiety, almost led to a divorce. I started putting weight on again because I was starting to emotionally eat again, right? And so one day, I just told myself, like, I've got to have this conversation with him and we have to part ways. He can have Fit Body Bootcamp or I can, but we both can't run it together. And so I texted him and I said, hey, can you meet me in the office, at the office? And I was like probably an hour and a half away from the office at the time. I'm driving there and Peter, everything inside me is saying, just go off the exit, just turn around, just text him and say, hey, never mind, there's nothing to talk about. But I kept telling myself, Bedros, it's time to man up. It's time to man up. I drove an hour and a half literally saying that mantra over and over again. It's time to man up. It's time to man up until I got to the headquarters. And truth be told, I parked in front of our office. I'm sitting in my car. I'm like, just put it in reverse. Go back home. Yeah. You know, no, it's time to man up. It's time to have that conversation. So it was a call to action that do what you need to do. Have the hard conversation and part ways as friends before things get worse. And so it's those five words, it's time to man up, help me not only part ways with him, but help me get clear on my vision for my team. I hated my employees, and today I call them team members. Back then I had employees. They clocked in a little late, clocked out a little early, did the bare minimum. They didn't know what my vision was, and I had resentment towards them, but I didn't have vision. So man up really is rise to your full potential. It's stop making excuses, take control of your situation, and rise to your potential. I was using the excuse of, oh, my partner means well, but I was coming up with excuses for him. Oh, my employees mean well, but they just don't understand. Oh, my franchisees don't understand how hard I'm working and that's why they're complaining, right? I was the problem. I had to stop making excuses for everybody, take control, and then have the conversations, become self-disciplined, eat right, train right, know that I want 2,500 locations by the year 2023, and build a high-performance team instead of just employees who kind of showed up and barely worked. So man up is a call to action. And I tell anyone, if you have greater potential in life and you're not reaching it, it's time to man up. Yeah.
And I think you're very detail-oriented, right?
Yes, sir.
Because I went to the restroom and I was so clean and the floor was shiny. I was like, oh, wow, this is good.
Yeah, you'll never find a thing out of place around here. Because it goes back to what T. Harv Eckert said, how you do anything is how you do everything, right?
And is that true?
Absolutely, absolutely. If I walk out to your car right now, I can tell by the way you're buttoned up right now that if I walk out to your car and look at it, it's spotless inside. There's no protein bar wrappers or empty Starbucks cups. And then we can go find a car that we do see burger wrappers and empty Starbucks cups and containers. And then we can find who owns that and go find their office in the building next door because they wouldn't be in this building or the building next door. We find their office, it's gonna look like their car. And then if their office looks like their car, their thoughts are like that. Their bank account, if we look at it, it's chaotic. Their relationship is a mess. It's chaotic. You look at their health. It's chaotic. How you do anything is how you do everything. It's everything's connected.
Yeah. And one last question to you, Bedros. Something that I ask all my guests. Yeah. We're all about sharing journeys, and your journey is incredible. But what I really want to do is when people are done watching and listening to this, that they take action in their own life, because then this conversation matters and we can help them change their own life. So if they can just do one thing right after this, what would that be?
That one thing is tomorrow morning, do not hit the snooze button. That's it. The one thing you can do immediately to create a positive change in your life tomorrow is to not hit the snooze button when your alarm goes off. And the reason for that is you are telling your subconscious mind that you are accepting 10 more minutes of interrupted mediocre sleep over waking up and living your purpose and your passion on this planet. And if the very first decision you made in the morning is a decision of weakness, of mediocrity, how do you think the rest of your day is going to go? So I want them to spring out of bed, brush their teeth, go through their gratitude exercises, do whatever it takes to dominate their path instead of hitting that fucking snooze button.
Yeah. I love it. Bedros, I am grateful that you gave me the opportunity to come here today to meet with you and to talk with you. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart.
Yes,
it
sir.
Means the world to me. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for watching and listening to this. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I did. And if you did, make sure to share it with someone that you think really needs this. Or maybe someone that would never listen to something like this, because maybe that's the person that needs a little bit of change in their own life. So do that right now. And also check out this book. It's called Man Up, and I'm not just saying that because I'm sitting next to Bedros. It looks dangerous. I genuinely like this book. I've read hundreds of books, and this book made an impact in my life. And I actually, this morning when you said that about snooze thing, when I was thinking this morning, I can't snooze because I'm gonna meet this guy today. And I rarely snooze, but it happens maybe once in a month. But I'm gonna quit with that too, because I don't think that's a good trait of a person that I want to be and want to become. So thanks again. Here it is, Man Up. Thanks, bye.